Hey, thanks so much for clicking or tapping on this video or this podcast, wherever you have found us today. And welcome to the Foundry Church, where we're all about a better you and a better world. You can find some links in the description box below this to our website, to our Facebook page, so that you can find out more about who we are and what we're about, and so that you can get connected. There's also links to our prayer request form and our giving portal if you feel so inclined to help support financially what we're doing here at the Foundry Church. What you're about to see or hear is a message from one of our Sunday morning services, and we hope that you enjoy.
Good morning. Welcome to the Foundry, where we're all about a better you and a better world. My name is Seth, and I'm so very glad you're here. Yay. Yay. All right. So we are in week three of our series called Jump, Don't Jump. And basically what we've been talking about is like how everything that we see on the internet, that people are talking about the Bible and God and that sort of stuff, like we don't have to really buy into all that, right? And the idea is, like, if all your friends were jumping off a bridge, would you? To which I would say, yes, bridge jumping can be fun, but also, like, we need to be kind of careful. We have to, like, look out for things like rocks. We have to look out for, like boats and stuff like that. So in this context, like, maybe do a little research, do a little digging, just kind of check in before you blindly agree with what people are posting. So we've been looking at and using the work of Dr. Dan McClellan, who is a scholar of the Bible and religion. And again, we're just using his work as a tool. If you go look him up and look through his stuff, he addresses a wide variety of things you may or may not agree with. We don't agree with everything that he says and does. That's okay. We're just using this as a tool. That is it. So this week, we're going to look at three more videos because they're on the shorter side of things. And there's kind of a theme that connects all these together. We're not going to do a ton of unpacking here. This is fairly self-explanatory, but these videos, I think, will set us up for kind of an interesting question. Okay, so they're all kind of dealing with like biblical artifacts, biblical archaeology, that sort of thing. Okay, so here is video number one. Take a look.
This could be one of the biggest finds for Christianity since the Dead Sea Scrolls.
All right, let's see it.
So a few years ago, archaeologists were studying this cave in a remote part of Jordan where Christian refugees were known to have fled after the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70, when they uncovered this collection of 70 tiny books made of lead and copper.
Now, so this is false. These codices were absolutely not discovered by archaeologists. They were brought to a man named David Elkington, who then published a press release in 2011 announcing the discovery of these codices. He was not there wherever they were discovered, and the story about where they came from and how they came into Elkington's hands has changed over the years.
They're still being studied, but they can unlock some of the most important secrets of early Christianity.
So these codices are not still being studied. They were immediately identified as forgeries by a number of professionals, classicists, philologists, epigraphers, archaeologists, and that has been the overwhelming consensus ever since Elkington came forward with them, partially aided by an Oxford classicist named Peter Thoneman, who emailed a bunch of colleagues immediately after Elkington went public and said, hey, this guy emailed me some photos a year ago of different plates that had iconography and inscriptions on them, and he asked me to authenticate them. And one of the inscriptions was clearly done by somebody who did not know Greek, because it was nonsensical, because they had confused the alpha and the lambda. And he was actually able to track down the origin of the inscription. Someone copied it off of a funerary inscription on display in a museum in Amman, Jordan, within the last few decades, but copied it incorrectly and then reproduced it on these plates. Now, that plate that Elkington had sent to Thoneman the year before was not included within the new cache of plates that Elkington released with this press release. So it's entirely a hoax. It is a forgery. Elkington is just trying to get power and money.
Now, on these tiny pages are words, symbols, and images pointing to the Messiah, the crucifixion, and his resurrection.
So it doesn't say any such thing whatsoever anywhere on any of these codices, because all of the text is just gibberish. It's just collections of letters, and a lot of the scripts are inconsistent. For one, they only represent usually about a third to a half of all of the letters in the given scripts. So they're not using near enough letters to be a comprehensible language, but they're mixtures of Nabataean and Old Hebrew and Aramaic and Greek and some nonsensical characters, and their orientations are switched and they are inconsistent, and it is very clearly a forgery. Now, Elkington has claimed that a scholar translated a part of one of these codices, and it says, I stand in perfection or something like that. And I've actually spoken directly with the scholar who promoted that translation, and he has asked not to be identified because he never wants to be associated with these things ever again in his life. And he said that was just an attempt to try to find something coherent somewhere in these inscriptions, and that he does not believe that is what the text says. He was just trying to force some meaning onto it, and he does not stand by it. So this is entirely a hoax.
Could this possibly be the first ever portrait of Jesus Christ?
No, that's just old Helios iconography that has been hammered down, so it's not recognizable. All of these codices are fake.
So, the creator starts with, this could be one of the biggest finds in Christianity since the Dead Sea Scrolls. Oy, yay, yay. That one fell apart pretty quick, didn't it? And then Dan just starts to unpack it, says, no, this is all wrong. This is false. This wasn't real. He gives the backstory behind it. And then actually I was able to find one of the report from Jordan. It's what's it called? Jordan Times, which is an article, you know, the newspaper in Jordan that talked about this. Here's what the article said in reference to these discoveries. This is from Amman. The Department of Antiquities, the DOA, has announced that the lead codices allegedly found in a northern Jordan cave between 2005 and 2007 have been proven forged. The codices, comprised of more than 70 ring-bound books entirely made of lead, were reportedly found in a remote valley over a decade ago. The DOA director, General Manthur Jamhawi, said that the codices are kind of a professional forgery that was executed skillfully. It goes on, the department formed a committee of researchers and epigraphists who examined the books and confirmed that they were not authentic. In its report, the task force concluded that the examination from an point of view, thank you, proved that the metal books were false and worthless, as they contained irrelevant old letters and images, and that the manufacturer had no background about ancient inscriptions and their technical details or religious significance. Last portion we'll look at. At the time, the department described the findings of British scientist David Elkington as baseless, stressing that the cave was not found and the pictures he had nothing to do with the cave that was visited, which indicates that his insistence on the originality of the codices is baseless and uncredible. So how do you feel about that for your life's work? So the Department of Antiquities says, oh yeah, right, to this whole thing. But if you're interested, David Elkington's work is on Amazon. You can buy it, his books about the codices, if you're still interested. Also, hey, happy Mother's Day. I forgot to say happy Mother's Day. Thank you, women and moms especially. We appreciate you. Okay, so video number two, take a look at this one.
Nope, we were never supposed to see this, as world-ending biblical structures are coming out of hiding and everything we know about religion and science is all changing.
All right, let's see it.
People were terrified after archaeologists in Turkey found archaeological evidence showing proof that the Bible is actually real and that the world could face a supernatural biblical ending with the date potentially already set.
No, that is just a natural rock formation. No archaeologists were involved in its discovery. No one was terrified, and it has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on the end of the world.
The Bible mentions one of the last locations Noah's Ark was left in was Turkey.
No, it doesn't. Genesis 8:4 says that the boat came to rest on the mountains of Ararat, which have been traditionally identified with the range in eastern Turkey. But the nation of Turkey didn't exist in that time period, and also this story is a literary creation.
And after archaeologists went there, they were terrified to discover a 515-foot creepy structure that was identical to the Bible's ark that was buried deep underground. With the terrifying 3D scan done on site, researchers were able to see an actual human-made boat under the ground.
No archaeologists were involved. They found nothing apart from natural rock formations. And referring to everything as terrifying up to and including the 3D scan is asinine fear-mongering.
With marine equipment and food found inside, as well as several other internal measurements lining up exactly to what the Bible detailed, and even showing artifacts like rivet and petrified deck timber, which are only materials that were used to build boats in ancient times.
This is all misinformation. They did not find anything that was not a natural rock formation, and geologists have already explained why everything that they actually did find was the way it was.
Making people terrified at how this would be documented otherwise in the Bible before scientists even knew this boat existed.
I have no idea what that last sentence was supposed to mean, but this video has over 15 million views and almost 2 million likes. And we need to stop incentivizing people to make videos that make up lies about lies that other people made up.
My favorite part of that whole one is just the sigh at the very beginning. So this one, the creator starts with the statement, the world-ending biblical structures that are coming out of hiding and everything we know about religion and science is all changing. And Dan goes, oh, geez, here we go. Then he says, people were terrified when archaeologists found evidence to prove that the Bible was actually real and we could be facing a supernatural biblical ending with the date potentially already set. To which Dan says, yeah, no archaeologists were even involved with this. And referring to everything as terrifying, including the 3D scan, is just fear-mongering. It is interesting when you watch that video, and it's just everything that kid says is like, it's all fear-based language, right, to get people's attention. But I guess if you're spouting false claims, the way to get people's attention is to scare people. And Dan basically uses this video to make a point that, like, sometimes the internet can be pretty dumb. And we buy into these things, and the way the systems have been set up is that they're incentivizing these types of videos to play off of people's fears as a way to make money. Did you hear what he said about the original video? Had 15 million views from that original video and 2 million likes. It's crazy that people are just, yeah, let's share it, let's like it, let's watch it, let's tell other people about it. I did just a tiny bit of Googling about how much does YouTube pay for number of likes, how much does YouTube pay for 10 million likes, not even 15 views, sorry, views, not even 15 million views, 10 million views. Now, there's a range of evidence based on, like, niche and stuff like that, but you're looking at anywhere between, for 10 million views, between $25,000 and $300,000, depending on the niche and kind of some other factors in their algorithms. So that's 10 million views, $25,000 to $300,000. So anytime you hear somebody making some grandiose claim about something on the internet, just be a bit mindful of the possibility that there could be some ulterior motives. And that ulterior motive is like popularity and cash. Right? None of what the creator said is true. It's all information, misinformation. I found the article that Dan had pulled up. I'll show you just a summary of this. This was the article. It was called Bogus Noah's Ark from Turkey Exposed as a Common Geologic Structure. If you personally have issues with this, this is the person that did the article, Lawrence Gene Collins, Department of Geological Sciences, California State University. Here's the email if you want to have a debate with them about this. But here's the summary of the whole article, okay? Look at this. A natural rock structure near Dagu Bayazit, Turkey, we say that a lot, has been misidentified as Noah's Ark. Microscopic studies of a supposed iron bracket show that it is derived from weathered volcanic minerals. Supposed metal-braced walls are natural concentrations of limonite and magnetite in steeply inclined sedimentary layers in the limbs of a doubly plunging syncline. Obviously, we know what that is. Supposed fossilized gopher wood bark is crinkled metamorphosed peridotite, fossiliferous limestone. I am not a geologist. Interpreted as cross-cutting the sink line precluded the structure from being Noah's Ark because these supposed flood deposits are younger than the Ark. Anchor stones at Kazan are derived from local andesite and not from Mesopotamia. Okay, so again, if any of you have problems, laurencollins@gmail.com. If all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you? If this is the bridge, I'm going to pass on this one. This one is a hot mess of misinformation. Don't buy into all the hype and don't buy into all the fear-mongering. Also, this whole concept that we're dealing with when it comes to misinformation and stuff, I know for some of our older generations, if you keep saying that these videos are coming from TikTok, it's not just TikTok that's the problem, right? That's not the fear. This is happening in your emails that you're forwarding to each other as well, right? So don't get up on your high horse the young kid. No. We're all doing it in some way, shape, or form, okay? Yours are in emails that you keep forwarding and on Facebook that you keep liking and sharing, okay? This is just the easiest platform. All right, video number 3, take a look at this.
I don't think people understand, but this is one of the biggest facts that proves the Bible's true. And archaeologists have found physical evidence to verify it.
All right, let's see it.
And the fit today is the old school Hulk.
Now we all know the story of Exodus and how God actually told Moses to specifically build an altar so then people could sacrifice to get in covenant with him. And one of the key details of this story was that the altar had to be made of uncut stone. So at the foot of this mountain, which is currently burnt because God actually descended on it.
So that peak is called Jabal Makla, and that is in Saudi Arabia, and it is not burnt because God descended on it. It's burnt because that peak and dozens of other peaks in the hundreds of square miles around it are covered in what's called contact metamorphic rock, or rock that has been burnt by some kind of igneous intrusion, like a lava flow or something like that. And as you can see, this rock is all over this part of Saudi Arabia.
It still remains this altar of uncut stone.
So that structure is not at the foot of Jabal Makla. That structure is near Jabal al-Laws, a different peak, and it is not an altar of any kind whatsoever. It's actually animal pens, and archaeologists date that to the Nabataean period, which is over 1,000 years after any historical Moses would have been in the area.
So not only do the 3 layers of uncut stone remain, but also the 12 pillars of marble that were next to the altar that represented the 12 tribes of Israel.
So those are fragments of architectural pillars that also date to the Nabataean period, and they have absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with any pillars or standing stones or matzavot that are discussed in the Bible, because what's discussed in the Bible is a specific type of standing stone that has a flat side. They're not perfectly circular. Usually the back is unhewn, it's left natural, and then one side is made flat or close to flat, so that can be the face that has an inscription or painting or something on it. And we have numerous examples of this from ancient Southwest Asia, as well as from Israel and even from Israelite temples. And anyone who confuses architectural pillars for matzavot does not have the first clue what they're talking about.
If you believe the Bible's true, then subscribe.
Nah, I'm good.
I'm good. So this creator starts with the biggest facts that prove the Bible is true, and archaeologists have physical proof to verify it. Then he starts to talk about the book of Exodus and God telling Moses to build an altar. That part is true. Exodus chapter 20, verse 24, just so you know. Make an altar of earth for me and sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, your sheep and goats and your cattle. Wherever I cause my name to be honored, I will come to you and bless you. If you make an altar of stones for me, do not build it with dressed stones, for you will defile it if you use a tool on it. So the idea of the altar of uncut stone, that's where this comes from. The creator then goes on to make these three big claims. One is the burnt mountaintop, because God descended upon it, which Dan says, he zooms out on the satellite map and says, no, like that's like one mountain peak amongst hundreds of mountain peaks, amongst hundreds of square miles of a mountain range that is all covered in this contact metamorphic rock. He shows the satellite image so you can see all of that. It's all over Saudi Arabia. The second claim the guy makes is that the photo of this is where the altar of uncut stone would have been built by Moses, to which Dan says, no, that's a photo like at a different mountain. That's not even the same mountain you're talking about, and it's not an altar, but rather it's animal pens, and it's dated to 1,000 years after the time of Moses. Then the third claim is about the pillars, the pillar fragments. The creator says that these are the 12 pillars surrounding the altar, representing the 12 tribes, to which Dan says, those are architectural pillars. They also date to 1,000 years after Moses, and that they have nothing to do with what would have been required around the altar. And then he says anyone who confuses architectural pillars with matzavot has absolutely no idea what they're talking about, to which I felt like I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. The creator then says, if you believe the Bible is true, then subscribe below. To which Dan says, one of my favorite lines of his, nah, I'm good. I kind of want that to become my mantra for a lot of life. Nah, I'm good. So what is the driving motivation here for this creator to make this video that is entirely false information? If you believe the Bible is true, then subscribe now. It's about subscribers. It's about creating a following, because more subscribers means more views, which translates into more money. Which brings us to...
Hey, it's Joseph breaking in here very quickly just to let you know that it was at this point in the message we had an equipment failure, and we lost, unfortunately, a couple of minutes of the message, both in our live stream and on the recording. We apologize for that. We just wanted to make sure that you knew why Seth did not complete the thought that he was in the middle of saying and is about to pick up with a brand new thought. All right, back to the message.
What is the obsession here? What if everything in the Bible was proved to be true? What if everything in the Bible was proved to be true? Without a shadow of a doubt, we had evidence for every person, every place, every event that happened in the Bible. What would that do for you? Would it change how you live? Would it change your level of devotion? Would it change how much you talk to people about Jesus? What would it change? Would a lot change? And if a lot would change, what does that speak to, like, kind of where you're currently at in your relationship with God? On the flip side, what if there was no evidence, no physical proof whatsoever? What would that do for you? How would that change how you live? Would that change your level of devotion? Would that change your appreciation of the scripture? Would that change your devotion to God? What would it change? And what would that say about where you're at with your relationship with God? Like, where does faith come into play here with all of this? Is it silly to have faith without any physical evidence? Maybe. Is it silly to have no faith if there's some physical evidence? Maybe. Do we all give doubting Thomas a hard time when he questions Jesus, but we're all kind of doubting Thomas? Let me see the proof. Show me the evidence. Find the ark. Find the Holy Grail. Let's look at what Jesus says about faith and proof. John chapter 20. We looked at this at Easter, but I think it's good to hear these words of Jesus again. But he said to them, and this is not Jesus, this is Thomas speaking, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. Thomas said to him, my Lord and my God. Then Jesus told him, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed. Or maybe blessed are those who have not needed piles of physical evidence and still believed. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, for we live by faith, not by sight. Yeah, but we need the archaeological evidence to prove to others that our faith is the rightest. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks even though he is dead. This passage goes on and on to list person after person after person. It says, by faith, so-and-so did this. By faith, so-and-so did that. What did the verse for the first verse say? Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance in what we do not see. But what it seems like, based on these videos we're seeing and the endless number of ones that are out there just like it, what it seems like is that for many Christians, faith is confidence in what we can prove and assurance in what we can see. And I get it. I'm with you. I've had this thought many times before. Like, I wish God would just show up and prove himself without a shadow of a doubt. Why can't God just show up? Like, if God can part the Red Sea, surely he could, like, throw a few thousand in my bank account just to prove that he exists, you know? Like, maybe that would be a nice thing. If God exists and God can do all these miracles, how come there's still war and violence and famine? And how come there's, like, God, just show, like, just let us know, like, that it's all going to be okay. I get it. I understand it. How else do we wrestle through these things? Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. Corinthians says, we live by faith, not by sight. And Hebrews says, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance in what we cannot see. So why does it seem like so many of us, so many Christians, so many people are so desperate to prove, to find this hard evidence for the validity of the Bible? You know, the irony here, of course, to me, and this is just Seth's opinion here, is that often it seems like the people who are the most adamant about defending and proving the Bible based on historical and archaeological and scientific evidence also tend to be the people who will reject the historical, archaeological, and scientific evidence if it doesn't align with their belief systems. It's like a weird catch-22. We want this to prove what we want it to prove, but if it doesn't exist. And at the end of the day, what is the point of needing proof? Well, the thought may go, well, if we can prove the Bible to be true, then we can prove that God is real. Okay, then what? Well, if I can prove that God is real, then it means that I'm believing the right things. And if I'm believing the right things, it means that they're believing the wrong things, which means I'm right and they're wrong, which means I win and they lose, which means I'm in and they're out, and now my ego is satiated. Is that why we need the proof? The reality is you can't prove God with empirical data. You're trying to prove something that you can't see, taste, touch, or feel. I mean, we do have a fair amount of things that we can point to that serve to validate the claims of the scripture. We do have things, we do. But also, if the God of the Bible, who is the creator of the universe and all that is, and all that is has come through this divine being, do you really think that that God needs you to be whittling together with all these scraps of evidence to prove that this thing exists? I wonder if God's like, what are you guys doing? Really? I mean, not only that, but like Paul talks about in the book of Romans, like all creation speaks to the evidence of God. Have you seen a strand of DNA under a microscope? Have you seen the new photos, the deep space photos from the James Webb telescope? Have you seen life brought into the world, a baby being born? Have you listened to a heartbeat, to your heartbeat, to somebody else's heartbeat? Have you had the experience of listening to the joy of a child's laughter? Have you experienced like real love from a parent, from a partner, from a mother? Have you stared into a night sky and pondered the vastness of the universe and contemplated the tininess of mankind, of our own humanity? I would say that evidence is all around us. And maybe we would do well to spend less time proving or attempting to prove and more time observing and marveling at the creation that has been given to us so that we may understand the God that's behind all of it better. Romans 1:20, Paul says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made so that people are without excuse." The evidence I need to have faith in God, in the God that I cannot see, in my opinion, is already all around us. I don't need the ark to be found. I don't need to prove whether the story of Jonah and the whale was literal or not. I don't need the tiny copper books. I don't need the architectural columns. I don't need to argue or attempt to prove whether or not the story of creation was literal. I trust that the God who is love, who cared enough to bring this universe into existence and cared enough to give me the chance to experience life in this universe, that same God who created all that is will be there to walk with me through all of it. And it's like we've put so much stock in absolute, verifiable, empirical certainty that we've lost our understanding of what it means to have faith. And sometimes I wonder if we've idolized certainty. Like, we weren't meant to worship the Bible. You keep proving a thing, trying to prove a thing that's important, but we're not meant to worship the Bible. The Bible is a neon sign that's pointing to the real thing. It's not the destination. It's the thing that's pointing the way. And I'm not advocating for blind, dumb faith here, right? Like, just shut up and believe. But I am saying that maybe we would do well to acknowledge that it's called faith for a reason. And there's a whole lot that we don't know. And there's a whole lot that we can't prove. Maybe we would do well to acknowledge that. Yeah, there's some stuff we can point to. There is some stuff we can point to. That's wonderful. That's great. There's also a whole lot of mystery. And that's also okay. And that's part of what it means to have faith. So I'm going to trust that there is something or someone who is greater than myself, who is behind all of this and holds all of it together, and that this thing that's behind all of it ultimately loves and wants what's best for us, for you, for me. I mean, even when it comes to this stuff with the family life minister, like, we're trusting in God to help provide. We're trusting in you and your relationship with God to help provide. Like, we're taking a step of faith here. Like, Hunter's moving into this role of executive, and he's helping take on Doug's role as Doug is trying to, like, adjust and move into retirement. There's a lot of moving parts here. We have faith that God is going to guide and be with us through that moment. That's why we're taking these steps. That's why we're asking for help. We're trusting God, trusting you with this process. Faith is confidence. You know, we don't have evidence it's going to work. We don't have the evidence that it's going to work. We're trusting. We're having the faith. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. And according to Jesus, it's in the believing without the seeing that we will be blessed. Yeah. Maybe we need to stop searching for evidence and just open our eyes to the evidence already here. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see.
Well, once again, thank you for choosing to spend some of your week with us here at the Foundry Church. Please don't forget to check out the links in the description box below. We hope that you have an amazing and awesome week, and we'll see you next time here at the Foundry Church.